Hello, Soul Family, and welcome to the Soul Goddess Podcast. My name is Aishwarya. I am a mystic, healer, coach, and music artist. We are walking into a pivotal golden age on Earth, and it's time to cultivate the art and science of elevating your consciousness to extraordinary levels. Imagine having the most profound relationships, tapping into your divine guidance, embracing your true soul design, and unlocking supernatural abundance through your innate gifts. Those are the conversations we will be having twice a week, every Wednesday and Thursday, and we will have episodes that will nourish your spirit and expand your horizons. Don't forget to subscribe and become a part of our ever-growing soul family, and expect to meet incredible guests who will bring their unique wisdom and experiences to the table. And on other episodes, it will just be me and you. Remember, you're more than a listener to me. You are family. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Soul Goddess Podcast. Today, I have such a special guest who is actually my first guest speaker on this podcast. And she is called Tana Espino. She is right now, she's in Europe, but she's actually based in California. And Tana Espino is a licensed psychotherapist and somatic coach, teaching women how to heal from codependency and anxious attachment so that they're not losing themselves in relationships. Tana is trauma-informed and uses somatic work, which is nervous system regulation, as a foundation for helping women deepen their connection with themselves, heal their attachment wounds, illuminate their intuition, and transform their anxious attachment and shift codependency into confidence. Tana, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. And I'm so excited to speak about this topic because, you know, attachment styles is something that is quite prevalent out there in terms of information, but there's some things which are, I find, like, leaves me, you know, with question marks. And, you know, today we're really going to talk about transforming, like, alchemy in action and transforming anxious attachment into empowered connection.
Yes, absolutely.
Great. So can we just start with, you know, how would you define anxious attachment?
Yeah, so we can look at anxious attachment as part of your survival strategy when you were an infant, as it's formed in the first 3 years of life, and probably even before, like in the womb, right? Assuming that the parent, you know, whatever that parent has that connection to their baby already in the womb, right? Like, we're looking at, like, what was the pregnancy like? What was the state of mind of that parent? So that's why I say, like, even in the womb, we can probably already start seeing something happening there. And it's a survival strategy that little infant develops to survive when it feels that it may not get its needs. So specifically with anxious attachment, it's developed when the caregiver, whoever that primary caregiver is for that infant, where there's been an inconsistency in attunement to the little baby. So attunement could look like, you know, a fussy baby who maybe that parent isn't attuning to how the baby wants to be held in order to be soothed, or maybe isn't as consistently going towards the baby if the baby, let's say, is like a crying, or, you know, for various reasons, or even if the baby isn't crying, even if the baby is not in distress, but if that infant is, you know, just trying to get that parent's attention and is trying to, you know, is smiling or giggling or whatever, and if that parent isn't consistently present, like, emotionally present, maybe they could be physically present, but emotionally present and tuning into the baby, and is inconsistent in that, that's how the anxious attachment can develop. And it's a way for that baby to get that parent's attention in any way that it can. because it doesn't know when the next time it's going to get that attunement, right? So, and of course, this isn't to you know, blame parents, but it's more so around just understanding that there's probably various factors that prevent that consistent attunement, and that could look like generational trauma, or that could look like just a lot of other stressors or challenges that prevent that consistent attunement to that infant in those first 3 years of life.
No, that's fine. No, I was just so interested because, I mean, I've never heard anyone actually talk about, because I believe things start from the womb, but I've never heard anyone talk about attachment styles starting from the womb. So how would, you know, that start from the womb?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if, and I have a visual of this in one of my slides, but if we were to just imagine, like, the infant inside the womb, and it's in this very, like, you know, snuggly womb inside, right?
Yeah.
It has nowhere to go. And what's being developed first is part of the nervous system. So if that parent, let's say, is under a lot of stress while in their pregnancy, those chemicals, because we know these emotions and stress are chemicals, is going into the baby, and it creates almost like a, in quotes, like toxic kind of environment for the baby, because the baby has nowhere to go. It's in the womb, and then we could also start seeing how their survival of their nervous system survival starts to form in the womb, because if something feels threatening in the form of the chemicals coming in that are representative of stress or emotions, that baby's like, whoa, what's happening here? And can feel that because of the chemicals traveling into the placenta, into the womb. So if, you know, yeah, so I would say the example would be just high levels of stress for that parent, that maybe it was an unplanned pregnancy, or, you know, or maybe it wasn't an unplanned pregnancy, but there was just other types of stress, or, you know, maybe it's a war-torn country and they're pregnant and that's stressful, you know, in the social aspect of it. So there could be a lot of stressors that the parent isn't really as present in connecting to what's growing inside. So that's all of that, we could say energy even, is transmitted to that little infant inside.
Yeah, wow, that's so interesting. And then, like, what happens if so after the infant is born, after the baby is born, and they form an attachment maybe with somebody like their grandmother or something like that? But then is that sufficient enough, or does it have to be with the mother?
Yeah, no, it could be with anyone that's there. At least, like, the term is like a good enough or good amount. And maybe, you know, percentage wise, if we're looking at it, think of it as like at least like 80% or 75% of the time. Someone's attuning to you, like that can be more developed into a more of a secure attachment for someone, and they just need that one person. They just need to know that there's that one person. So let's say mom, in this case, in this example, mother is a bit more inconsistent because she needs to work two jobs because she's a single parent, let's just assume. And that grandmother is the one that's there to take care of that baby while mom is working these two jobs, you know, by herself. Then that is assuming, you know, grandmother is attuned, then that is, you know, quote unquote, sufficient enough for that baby to more likely develop this more of a secure attachment.
Okay.
And then, so it doesn't need to be like it doesn't need to be like, you know, 100% of the time consistently, but like just a quote unquote good amount of time. And it's, I don't know where I got, I forgot where I got like 80%, I don't know why that number stands out, but it's kind of like at least a good amount of time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then is that from the womb to about 8 years old, or what kind of age range?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the research shows that about up until about 3 years old is where there's that blueprint of the attachment developing. Of course, it isn't something fixed, like meaning it's not just, okay, that's it, and then, you know, the doors close and you are, you know, just in that attachment. But it's the primary one that's developed within the first 3 years. So let's say someone is more on the anxious side in the first 3 years, but then there's lots of more connecting experiences after that, that can totally, you know, transform into that of a more secure attachment, assuming, like, let's say that there's lots of different experiences and positive attaching ones, then they could absolutely shift throughout their life.
Okay. And then can it go the other way around as well? Like, if you've had a really good, you know, attuned attachment, and then it goes all, there's a lot of like disruption, and, you know, that, like, what I'm trying to say is that if you have that, those first 3 years, is that really solid enough to carry you through life, or is that kind of a little bit fragile that the experiences after that can, you know, taint that time?
Yeah, that's a good question. It can taint. So let's assume, right, like the first 3 years, it's securely attached, but then you're saying, like, let's say there's other things throughout their life that might have affected them, and, you know, it could be trauma, or it could be a relationship where there's, like, let's say, intimate partner violence, or it have to be something, things like that, like ongoing, also like ongoing stresses in a relationship where it can develop into that anxious attachment. But it'd have to be something that's kind of like an ongoing stressor. In whatever way that looks like that their nervous system finds as threatening to the connection, in order for it to go into this, like, what's in this case, you know, we're talking about anxious attachment, in order for it to go into this anxious attachment. But also the question reminds me of clients that maybe they are more on the, let's say, secure attachment, or even, let's just say, even clients that are more anxiously attached, but I'll lead with secure attachment. That even some of my clients with secure attachment, if they are, let's say, dating someone or in a relationship with someone that is inconsistent in how they're showing up emotionally, let's say, then absolutely they would. I think anyone would feel anxious, even someone who's, like, more securely attached, right? Because it's like, well, wait a second, like, what's going on here? Like, I'm feeling confused, or there's mixed signals, or emotionally, like, you're pulling back, but then you're present, or I'm not hearing for you for, like, 3 days, or, you know, whatever that might be. So I think even someone who's more securely attached might experience more of an anxiety within their relationship, not because necessarily their nervous system's go-to is an anxious attached one, but because, you know, the experience is creating anxiety for anyone who is having that type of dynamic with someone that they're dating or with their partner.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because I know that that's something that people who may identify as being anxiously attached struggle with, like, you know, having, and of course, anyone would struggle with that. Anyone, probably a secure person, would be less attracted to that and just cut the cord quicker. But an anxious attached person could find themselves in this cycle, because obviously reminds them of their childhood. So first of all, you know, I want to just go into, I just want to leave that anxiously attached person for a second and just go to the inconsistent person, because I know the question is always, why are they inconsistent? Is it to do with me? Is it because I'm not? So just let's go to the inconsistent person. What could make somebody like you know, may, because the dating advice out there is, if he's inconsistent, if he's sending mixed messages, he's not interested. I don't resonate with that because people are complex. So if somebody is inconsistent, what could be going on with them?
I hope that you are loving this episode, and I wanted to just take a quick minute to give you something super exciting, a free ticket to the 25-day Finally Feel Free virtual retreat. This is not an ordinary event. It is a sacred global sanctuary designed to support, elevate, and celebrate your unique journey. Me and over 50 visionary speakers will be diving into the realms of quantum health and wellness, unlocking wealth through your natural gifts, exploring a new form of divine love, and elevating to higher states of consciousness to create and experience your soul destiny. Don't miss this beautiful opportunity. Sign up. The link is in the show notes below. And now back to our episode.
Yeah, that's a great question for in that other perspective. There could be a lot of things, but what's coming to my mind, just kind of going based off of, you know, the clients that are coming to me, and even working with some men in the past, and their desire to want to change the, how they show up inconsistently. What comes is, you know, the attachment style of theirs.
Yeah.
And let's go with like the one that's most common in this type of dynamic, which is somebody that has more of an avoidant attachment, where the closeness, emotional closeness, is what triggers their avoidant attachment, or the stress of feeling like they have to show up emotionally for someone that maybe can't show up for themselves. That can create that sense of like pulling back. And although their deep desire is not to pull back, but to connect, their fear is much greater than that. And their subconscious fear is actually around, you know, being vulnerable. Because what if you leave? So it's interesting because both attachment styles have that kind of core fear of abandonment, but it shows up differently. Right, because for the avoidant person, they show up with, I don't want this. So it's like, I don't want the closeness, right? This is, we're going to say this is kind of like their attachment and subconscious speaking. I don't want the closeness because what if you leave? What if I become vulnerable with you, but and then you leave? Is what their subconscious and attachment is saying. So then they pull back, or when they feel more emotionally quote unquote safe, they kind of come back in. And then they might pull back again for in whatever their triggers are, that, you know, their nervous system's like, this closeness doesn't feel as safe. So then their strategy, whatever that aside from pulling back, maybe their strategy isn't to reach out. Maybe their strategy is to go within and sort through their whatever stress is happening. Also, I think it's how they, so in addition to attachment, I think it's also how they're managing their stress. Because if there's a lot of stress, we're looking at like, okay, do they go inward and pull back and like not, you know, I don't know, like communicate to anyone when they're stressed out? Like, is it something that like they're internally processing? So that's another thing as well. Like, how are they also managing their stress? Like, is it that they're not managing it? And so then stressors, you know, stressors block them from showing up emotionally in a certain way or in that dating or relationship dynamic. So I'd say probably those two are like the biggest ones that come to my mind right now as to why there is an inconsistency with how they're showing up, whether through in the dating scene or once they're kind of already maybe in the beginning of stages of their relationship that they've decided to commit to. So yeah, I think those are the two that are most common, but it's definitely a lot to do with, you know, being vulnerable when we're talking about the attachment part.
Yeah. And then like, yeah. is that also applicable to people, to say, you know, a man who would come on super, like really interested and shows up as being close and intimate and then pulls away and then comes back really strong again? Is that typical of what you're talking about?
Yeah. And I'd have to say that somebody who's more avoidantly attached, they actually might seem secure in the beginning, because in the beginning there isn't much, we're going to say to them, right, much of a quote unquote threat of closeness, because it's like, I'm getting to know you and like, you know, showing up and I'm likable and social, or, you know, or whatever, like all of that stuff, right? Like they're showing up in that way. But, and this goes same with the anxious attached person, but since we're talking about avoidantly attached, so they can show up and it's not until there's either some sort of stressor, whatever that stressor is to that specific person who's avoidantly attached, right? That could be work stuff, whatever they consider stress, right? And them themselves sensing an emotional closeness either from them, right? Like they feel, you know, strong feelings for this person, or they're sensing something from the other person that would activate this attachment of theirs, then that's when we kind of see this kind of pulling back. And then, oh, okay, like she's, you know, let's say the one that's more anxiously attached. Oh, okay, she's emotionally, you know, pulling back. Now it's safe for me to step forward. And so then there's this kind of dance that happens. But I do want to say that these attachment styles are activated when in the presence of quote unquote threat, real or perceived. Yeah. So it's not something, so this is why it's hard to identify in the beginning, let's say in the beginning of dating, because there isn't anything necessarily there that your nervous system would be activated on, right? Unless, you know, let's say after the second date, the person who's more anxiously attached is just kind of like thinking about this person, and they're like, well, we went on the second date and it's been four days and I haven't heard from him. I'm going to go check his social media, see if he's on there, you know, like then it starts kind of going there. And because there's been a quote unquote threat that's been activated, that a threat is the lack of, you know, communication, let's say in between, you know, the dates as an example, right? So then that can activate that anxious attachment for this person, or somebody who's more avoidantly attached, you know, something like receiving more, let's say as an example, like several text messages around, you know, when they're going to go on the next date or whatever, like that to an avoidantly attached person, they might feel, like that's kind of, you know, a threat to them, an emotional threat. So then they might pull back a little bit. So it really does depend on the person as to what their nervous system perceives as a threat for this attachment system to get activated. And then when it's activated, you know, they go into their coping strategies, into how they cope. Meaning one pulls back, the other leans towards and clings on and tries to, you know, call and whatever, right? Whatever it is, whatever that strategy is to get the attachment back, to get the clinging back in for the more anxiously attached person.
And what I love to put in this part as well, because I also, you know, look at energy, and sometimes it's not even the physical kind of, you know, oh, I really want to hear from you. Like, it's not even the physical anxious. Like, I also feel that if you're constantly thinking about somebody, they can feel that. I don't know how you feel, Tana, but I don't know. Like, I think it's also an energetic thing. And then when you pull back and focus on yourself, that other person can then be like, oh, this feels energetically different as well.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I could totally see that, because that reminds me, kind of going back to what I mentioned about what's happening in the womb, right? Like, let's go with that as well. Like, the infant also not just sensing the actual chemicals of stress and emotions transmitting into the womb, but the energy of the mother, right? As you're stating here, we're talking about energy that's being that infant's picking up from the mother, whether that energy is this loving energy that the mother's connecting to the baby, or, you know, an energy of stress because there's so many challenges and stressors for that mother. So yeah, I could totally see what you're referring to with the energy that either one is picking up from the other.
Yeah. And before we move on to, you know, the anxious anxious attached person, the avoidant, so is the experience of the avoidantly attached person the opposite? So is it like it was too much, like a suffocating energy from the parent, and love is, you know, like it's going to suffocate me? Is that the experience?
That's a good question. Yeah. So let's say that with both attachments, we're going to say it involves caregivers who are not attuned to their child for various reasons. So yes, somebody more on the avoidant attached side, we could say, is developed. It can be that. It can be that, like, the smothering, because that caregiver is misattuned to the needs of that little infant. So it could look like too much. Or not enough at all consistently. And so then let's go with, like, well, so let's assume it's the opposite. Like, there's not enough attunement, you know, at all, really consistently not enough. So then that baby learns, like, whoa, I feel here on my own and alone. And that actually feels scary. So I'm going to withdraw in, like going in. And this is all kind of, you know, because the baby doesn't have the thoughts yet, right? They're just an infant. So we're going to say that their nervous system is doing the talking and is doing the work for them. So it's kind of like, we're going to pull in because it's safer just to go in and, you know, almost not reach out as much, because there's no one really there to hold on to. And if there's no one there, that's pretty terrifying. If I keep trying and there's no one there, so let me not try anymore. Let me not try as much is what the nervous system is kind of saying here. With somebody who's more in regard to the development of avoidant attachment, because there isn't anyone consistently showing up. And so it's more so that than the other one, with, like, this, I think you mentioned first, like, if it's like too much, like just mothering with that baby or that toddler is like, this is like, just get away. Yeah, that it could happen that way too. But it's more common in the route of, like, there's no one there that I can, you know, attune to. So I'm not going to even bother tuning in. It's just much safer to go inward and to stay within. In those, like, moments of quote unquote emotional threat, right? When the system feels that there's a threat, like that's gonna start developing, like that pattern to go inward.
Okay. So what's really interesting to me is that you know, in dating, and I think you mentioned this before, that someone while dating could be super secure and maybe come across as quite avoidant, but the minute they, you know, that, like you say, their nervous system is activated or perceived threat is there, they can become super anxious, and then the other person's like, whoa, hold on, like, I'm so confused, you know, you were totally different when we were dating and now you are like a different person. And I think this is actually quite common and not spoken enough about. So how do we even start navigating that? Like, because people feel duped. They're like, oh, I'm so, you know, so how can we start shifting all of this?
Yeah, you're so right. That's what it is. Like, they feel kind of like, wait a second, like, what? I didn't know this. I feel like I've been, you know, bamboozled or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a great question. I'm thinking of a few past lovely clients of mine that, you know, worked a lot on shifting their anxious attachment. And And they were still kind of teetering in between anxious and secure when they started dating someone. But I remember one specific client who shared with me that, like, she's like, oh, you know, I'm dating someone new, but I think they're more avoidantly attached. And it was great to see her, you know, kind of have this like information just based on some questions that she asked, because she had learned a lot. And so she was like, yeah, I think he is. And so there were moments that she shared where, like, they would get into arguments and their attachment systems would activate, right? And what she did was, you know, she spoke to him about it, about the dynamic and about attachment styles, and he had never heard of that. So in that situation, it was wonderful because he was actually open to understanding more about his own attachment style and how it's showing up in their dynamic, and how to, you know, and him being open to wanting to change it, so that he's feeling better, but also he's showing up differently. So that, you know, dynamic ended up working well because there's two people and they're very much open and committed to the other's well-being, that they want to, you know, change something that is going to benefit themselves in their well-being, but also like their partner and how they're showing up. So that type of relationship works if we have someone that's more anxiously attached and someone who's more avoidantly attached. And when they're both willing to look within and self-reflect, I'm like, oh, that's how I'm showing up. Oh, wait, when has this, you know, wow, this strategy has been so safe for me this whole time. I didn't know that that was actually a problem, or, you know, whatever, right? And so then that self-reflection and their commitment to growth and their commitment for each other, I think absolutely, absolutely works. And so it's not so much that, you know, it's something to look out for, like, meaning it's not like, uh-oh, don't date that person because they're avoidantly attached. Because, you know, it can go both ways, right? Like, someone can say, oh, don't date that person, they're anxiously attached, they're, you know, they're going to be clinging onto you, you know. So it's more so like not coming from that judgment place. But if somebody can come in from a place of like, oh, I understand my pattern, and actually I'm seeing this in my partner, let's have a discussion about it, so that we can show up differently for each other and work through our attachments. To understand that this is a safe relationship to be in, then it could totally work. As long as two people are committed to growth, you know, the two different types of attachments can work together, because they're on, they have a goal of growth, right?
And yeah. It's, I mean, I think it's interesting as well, because it could be like, you know, while you're dating your one attachment style. But I also find that, especially when I look back on my experiences as well, like in the beginning of a relationship or in the beginning of, like, you know, getting to know someone and it's a relationship, I was definitely anxious. But then once I knew that person, you know, once I knew, you know, this is like a stable thing, then I became secure. So it's almost like, I don't know if this even exists, because when I've researched this, it's like your one attachment style and all of, and that was the kind of consensus. But I find that, yeah, it's like different each time, or with each person can trigger something different within me. Or if someone is really super secure and consistent, then I wouldn't get anxious. And yeah, this has been my experience.
Yeah, that's the other part of it too. Yeah, thanks for sharing your experience. That's been also similar to me as well, with like some partners, they don't activate that anxious attachment because, yeah, maybe they're just kind of all there. The reason I say it like this is because I'm thinking of a specific relationship in the past where, when I was in my early 20s, after getting out of a very unhealthy relationship, I went into one that was quote unquote healthy. And my nervous system's like, what is, like, this is just way too quote unquote calm, too grounding. We're not used to this. Eventually, you know, I broke up with him because I was just like, something's missing. And, you know, the reality was that my system wasn't being activated because it was so used to an activated system. There was a lot of trauma in my system. And so it wasn't activating it. And then that didn't feel, that just wasn't something that my system was used to. It was used to this push and pull dynamic. And because I hadn't healed that, somebody that actually shows up and isn't activating my system did not feel right. It felt like the chemistry is missing. It felt like something, you know, was not there. But yeah, with different partners, different systems can, our system. So we could say our home away. So for example, for me, let's say my home away from home and my nervous system is more of that anxious side as an example, right? So sure, most likely it would, that anxious part would get activated if there's a partner, even if there's like, let's say, a secure partner, that maybe I might see certain tiny things as a threat when in reality it's not an emotional threat, but my system is so hyper vigilant around loss and abandonment that it takes in something minute as a possible threat. And then, you know, my system can get activated when in reality, there isn't anything, in reality, there isn't an actual threat. You know, the partner is more on the secure side. But sure, let's say that there's a partner that's more on also the anxious attached side. It could be that that person, in this case, let's talk about, it could be that that woman that's anxiously attached, that is a partner that's more insecure as well, that's anxiously attached, that she might then start to become a little bit more avoidant or just more withdrawn because it feels too much, this other person becoming attached. And that doesn't mean that that's just how it happens, but I'm saying that can be a possibility too, but it would depend on that person's own lived experience, that person's own kind of unique blueprint, right? Where a situation like that is highly possible. And then yes, you see that attachment kind of shift and morph into a different one.
And what is the difference between anxious attachment and codependency, or are they the same thing?
That's a good question. I see often that it's kind of used interchangeably, but it's not the same thing. Because anxious attachment is more on like, I need this other person to survive, is the language of the nervous system, right? It's not something conscious, but it's the language of the nervous system. It's like, I need this person for my survival. I need to ensure that I don't, quote unquote, get abandoned. I need to cling on. I need to attach and do anything to stay in this relationship, right? And again, it's active and it's an activated thing, right? We already established that the attachment is activated based on some sort of, you know, threat to the connection. With codependency, that is more behavior pattern. It's not about survival of attachment. It's more so, how am I going to survive my family dynamic, or how am I going to survive this dynamic? Because I have a need to be needed, is what codependency says. It's that there's this need for me to be needed. Then they go into that over giving and over fixing and carrying the burden of people's problems and making it their responsibility, or feeling guilty when they, you know, when they don't do that. So codependency is more of a behavior that is not activated. It's just kind of there. It's just kind of like, that's part of their habitual conditioned behavior of going into, you know, people pleasing, lack of boundaries, not feeling good enough. So then they do things to feel good enough to their, in any situation, but because we're talking about romantic relationships, we're going to talk about like in how it shows up in romantic relationships. So it's just kind of like working for their worth is codependency. And it's, like I mentioned, the dynamic is kind of that of the need to be needed as part of their like quote unquote survival strategy of maintaining connections. Like, how do I maintain this connection? Oh, I'm going to make myself quote unquote useful, and I'm going to, you know, worry and fix your problems and all of this stuff. And anxious attachment is not like that necessarily, although they both have a similar core belief around not feeling good enough, not feeling lovable. That's probably the core belief, but it's functioned very differently between both. And yes, somebody can have an anxious attachment and also have codependency. And that was my pattern. So it's like this kind of undercurrent of codependency, which is how, you know, I'm behaving kind of as a baseline. And then my anxious attachment in the past that would get activated, right, in these connections with people or in dating and relationships. So they're very much two different things, but the similarities are, you know, you lose yourself in the relationship and you don't feel, you know, good enough.
Yes. And I think we've all been there to a certain degree, especially people who are listening to the podcast about losing ourselves in relationships. And I know you work with a lot of like somatic healing, and you actually use that with your clients to help shift these kind of feelings, because I think we're all striving to become like a secure attachment style. We're all striving to just be healthy people, secure people. I know it seems unfair sometimes that some people can just be, you know, born and have had that life, but there's also a great journey to heal, because you do go, like, depending on your path. So I don't want it to be like, oh, if you don't have a secure attachment, then you're just behind everybody. It's not like that. Like, everybody's journey is different. But how do we, you know, get back to security through somatic healing so we can feel more secure?
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that with, you know, everyone is on a different journey. It doesn't mean that, like, you know, you're some sort of bad person because you have an avoidant attachment or an anxious attachment. It's just information for you to know, like, oh, this is how I show up in relationships when there's a discomfort or there's a stress. And so it's kind of learning about yourself in that way. And then, of course, understanding that, yes, these attachment systems are not fixed. They could, you know, they shift and transform, which is the good news. So when we're talking about somatic, we're looking at it through the lens of the nervous system, right? And so somebody, of course, more anxiously attached is in that survival response, more on like the sympathetic and that fight or flight response, or even the fawn response, which is a bit of that people pleasing. So part of starting to slowly shift this is working towards emotional regulation and working towards the nervous system regulation as well, which means that would look like, because our emotions communicate in the body through sensations, and so does our nervous system. So it's pretty much going in and noticing when we're experiencing an emotion, even if we don't know what the emotion is. That's fine. But when we're noticing a discomfort internally, right? Like, let's say, you know, I don't know, the person you're dating, it's been like 5 dates, but there's been some inconsistency in how they're communicating to you. And then you notice that you start to feel more anxious. It's about getting to know your system in regard to how does that anxiety show up for you? Is it in the form of stomach? Is it in the form of knots in your stomach? As an example, right? Like, oh, each time I'm looking at my phone, I feel anxious. I'm feeling, you know, knots in my stomach because I'm checking my messages or my social media and they haven't, you know, messaged me back. And so then it's working through the sensation of, like, in this example, the knots in your stomach, right? And then feeling into that, meaning connecting with it instead of suppressing it. Because one of the ways that we deflect these type of sensations is exactly that. It's like looking towards, you know, I don't know, social media or whatever to try to form a connection. It would feel we lost the connection instead of going inward to actually sense the fear or the anxiety that's coming up for us. So it's sensing it through the physical sensations, staying with it, connecting, acknowledging, validating these emotions, right? These in the form of sensations in the body, and then finding other parts in the body that feel different than the knot in your stomach, as an example, another part that feels more relaxed, and then focusing on that part in your body. And this is called pendulation. So we go from the discomfort to the area that feels more comfortable or more grounded or more calm. And then we shift back focus to the area that was uncomfortable. And there should be a decrease. So it's kind of like it pretty much like part of the somatic piece is feeling into what's happening internally. Sometimes feeling in can actually create more anxiety because part of our attachment systems is to not feel in to see what's going on. It's just too much. So sometimes going in can create a lot more anxiety. So in that case, we focus a bit more first on grounding and orienting to the external environment and just kind of feeling the presence of our body, but like within our environment, whatever that is. It doesn't have to be nature unless you have easy access to that, but it could be just literally in your own home, or if you have a pet, you know, or if you don't have anyone, then you can watch some YouTube videos that would activate a sense of warmth, whether that's like YouTube videos on like kittens or, you know, I don't know, something that brings in that kind of, you know, warm, nurturing connection internally. But that's kind of one of the things. It's understanding that your nervous system needs the regulation when your attachment system is activated, because these two things are both connected. And it's very much going into the body to do this process. Yes, cognitively, it's great to have information. Yes, it's great to read books on it. But your system needs to know that it's safe to be in relation or to be in connection to another person. So that's, I'd say, like, number one.
So it's do we just... So does somebody do this? So like, you know, when the anxiety comes up, so they just keep doing it until they feel calm. And like regulate themselves. But the only thing I want to put a note on that about is it's if you're feeling really uncomfortable with somebody else, it's not, I guess the goal is not to keep, you know, regulating yourself so you can deal with the discomfort. Right. It's the goal just to be able to heal yourself in the presence of this trigger, but then, you know, recalibrate and think again, like who is actually correct for you as a partner.
Awesome. That's exactly it. So I have this thing where I tell clients, like, when you are connecting with yourself in this way that I just shared, you'll have kind of like what you just said right now, you'll have clarity for you to choose, because you're choosing from a place that feels much more confident and grounding, because you're somatically working through the anxiety or the fear or the panic, like whatever these emotions are, you're working on them somatically, which means you're getting into a point of feeling more regulated. When we're more regulated, then our main thinking brain is back online. And yes, from that place, we have more clarity. And yeah, we get to choose, like, is this person really for us? Because now we're coming from a place of feeling very much regulated and grounded within. And it's not coming from that place of survival of like, oh my gosh, I have to attach to anyone because, you know, I'm scared to be alone or I don't want to be abandoned. And so then that place is coming from a place of survival, right? Like the way that we're picking people and staying in these dynamics and, you know, all of that. But yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up, that yeah, it's like, you're working internally so that you can make better judgment and decisions because you'll have more clarity. And this also, then part of this is, I think the important piece here is like, let's assume that the person is single, right? They're single. Maybe they're going on a few dates here and there that bring up the anxiety, but they're working through their attachment, right? It's highly likely and it's normal that, let's say they get into a relationship and their attachment system goes off, you know, is activated full on. Assuming, let's just assume that the person that they're with isn't as avoidantly attached, but maybe more on the secure side. But like their system might come turn on again because this is now the first time that they're actually in a relationship dynamic. So it's almost like we could see it as like a bit of like a residue or like a habitual thing of like their system coming on board and just perceiving anything as like, you know, a threat. So then they feel the need to cling. And that part's normal because this has been the first time that they are in relation with someone, because let's say they were working on their attachment system while being single or while dating here and there, it's only natural that it would definitely show up once they're in this kind of committed type of relationship. And at that point, all they have to do, because they've already been doing the work, is just, you know, they could communicate this with their partner, right? Because we're under the assumption that their partner is a safe person that's showing up for them emotionally. So they could communicate this fear with their partner and ask maybe for what they need while they're working through it as well, right? When they themselves are working through it, because it's kind of just, you know, residue that's there, that's a kind of leftover, but they know the tools and techniques to help move that through, to continue to support the nervous system, to show that like this person, hey, this person that we have here that we're connecting with is not, you know, they're not a, you know, it's not threatening. They're showing up for us. And, you know, there's clear communication as to what that person needs from this partner while they work through their, you know, anxious attachment.
Yeah, and that can just really give you confidence. I think it gives anybody confidence to just move through relationships, because relationships are you know, unpredictable sometimes. Sometimes people could show up for you and then they can drop away. And I know that's super scary for people to hear, but that's the truth. But it's not about putting the power into other people and expecting other people to not do this or not activate our triggers or show up in a certain way. It's to have the confidence to know that we can work through any trigger, anything that triggers our nervous system, anything that happens in our lives, and then have that ability, like you say, to have a regulated nervous system and then be able to choose something better for us. And I think when we start looking at love and dating in that way, rather than that person has to show up for me in this way for me to feel safe, it's actually like that person can show up however they show up, but I am safe because I know how to handle myself through all the all the ups and downs of day. And then I believe once you do that work, you will just naturally, you know, end up with a healthy partner that who is for you, whether we look at it from the lens of just healing all of this attachment styles, or, you know, I'm a big believer in just energy and universal laws. So all of that will lead you to what is meant for you.
Yes, I love how you worded that. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. It's an understanding that everything is impermanent. So when we're understanding that concept, then we understand that there are consequences when we are attaching and clinging and craving to another person, because you're right, everything is impermanent. We go into relationships to, you know, we want it to be forever if that's where we're at, but knowing that that anything could change at any moment. So yes, it's exactly what you said around knowing just how to do this work and heal, because we just don't know, you know, what will happen in these connections.
Exactly. And Tana, I know that you also have, in February 2024, you're putting together a program called Alchemizing Anxious Attachment. And obviously, we will put all your website and www.loveshustle.com down below. People can get in touch with you. But just could you tell us quickly a little bit about this program that you're putting together?
Yeah, thank you for that. Yes. It's just it's a 5-week program where I'm teaching these amazing, lovely women pretty much how to emotionally regulate. And this is kind of, I'm taking a snippet from my like 12-week private coaching and doing a group format where I'm teaching them the emotional regulation piece and the nervous system education part, so that they're educated more on like what's going on when I'm feeling this anxious attachment, right? So it's a group kind of on teaching them these somatic tools and getting them regulated so that they do feel very much empowered internally to start using these tools. But the basis of it is pretty much what you mentioned, that it's like no matter what, knowing that like no matter what, you will survive whatever type of rupture or ending of a relationship, that you'll make it through to the other side, meaning healing is totally possible with the right tools that you have to support your nervous system and to support your emotions versus, you know, running away from it, right? And I did this a long time ago in my past, right? I ran away from things by going into relationships back to back. Other people do this very differently, right? But it's all about running away from your emotions because it just feels too much. And then you don't know what to do with it because no one's taught us, right? So this group's very much around having this understanding that everything is impermanent, even our relationships, as much as we wish they weren't, but we just don't know, you know, what will happen, but that no matter what, we will have the tools to heal from whatever, you know, is happening in relationships.
That sounds like such a great program, and people can sign up, you know, find all of that on your website as well. And it's out in February, 2020. Wow. Well, Tana, thank you so much for this conversation. I myself can feel that this is just an empowering take on attachment styles, because the end goal is to heal and the end goal is to be able to be in control of your experience regardless of what anyone else is doing. And that's what we're here for. So thank you so much for all your expertise and just the level of detail you went into as well with each thing is much appreciated.
Oh, thank you, Asoria. Yeah, thank you for having me on. I love talking about all this.
Yes, of course.
Thank you for being here with us. Your presence here is a gift. To ensure you're always in tune with our latest explorations, subscribe to the Soul Goddess podcast so you're always notified of a new episode. Before we part ways for now, an exciting reminder to claim your free gifts waiting for you in the show notes. These are available for a limited time and they're crafted with love and intention just for you. Be wild, be free, and forever remain true to your authentic soul self. Until we meet again, sending you so much love and light.